What to do with critters who are someplace they don't really belong. It is one of the joys of living in Maine, access to all kinds of wildlife, even in the state's urban areas. But sometimes those critters get a little too close for comfort. So what do you do if you have bats in your attic? What about when a skunk comes in through that little rip in the screen door and wanders the house? Or when a family of raccoons takes up residency in your crawl space? It seems as though everyone has a story about at least one unwelcome house guest. What's yours? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we have three wildlife experts here to help. They'll offer guidance on when you can take care of a problem yourself and when you might want to call in the experts. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. With hints of spring in the air, it is time for Maine's wonderful abundance of wildlife to reemerge. And sometimes that means squirrels, bats, or other creatures in your home or garage. Today we'll hear from three experts on what to do if a skunk, possum, or some other wildlife decides to make a home in your home. In our Augusta studio with me, Maynard Stanley Jr. He owns and operates Critter Catcher Wildlife Control. Josh Sparks runs Sparks Ark Animal Services. And Bob Cordes is a Wildlife Special Projects Coordinator for the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have about wildlife encroaching onto your property? Or do you have a good story to share? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Josh, what are we seeing this time of year? The snow is melting. It's getting warmer.
Yeah, I was just talking with Bob on the way here. I saw my first woodchuck on the side of the highway on the way up here, still trying to find some grass. A few weeks ago, it was skunks. Usually right around Valentine's Day is when the breeding season for the skunks start, so they start coming out. I got my first call today about a raccoon up in somebody's attic, which is likely a female getting ready to have babies. So those are just starting to come in now. It's usually the skunks first, and then the raccoons coming in and the woodchucks.
Skunks, raccoons, woodchucks. I love it. Maybe we should have different seasons instead of calling it spring. But what about you, Maynard? Same kind of thing?
Pretty much. I did get my first actually a text message this morning on a very large woodchuck, and we'll be setting a trap for her on the way home.
Oh, really? On the way home from the show today? And and you say setting a trap. What do you do when you trap a woodchuck?
Well, I've got we probably use live traps for probably 95% of everything. I don't relocate rats. But about everything else, if it's healthy, we relocate. So she'll be relocated to a place far away from this guy's gardens.
Yeah, well, and I'll turn to you, Bob, for that question. I think a lot of people do a lot of relocating, even if it's not with an expert like Josh or like Maynard. What are some of the rules of the road for relocating something? You catch my yard, we have a lot of chipmunks. Where do you set them free? Where is it legal to set them free?
Well, that's a good question. That is complicated, actually. And in order to set a trap legally, you need to have a trapping license. But
even on your own property?
Yep. To be technical. Mm-hmm. But and there's several places that will rent live traps. And if someone does have an issue and wants to try to take care of it themselves, if they call a district game warden or the regional wildlife office, they can get permission to do so.
So if you have just, I'm not even talking something like skunks or raccoons, but you feel like you have too many chipmunks, too many squirrels, you're worried about them getting into your garage, eating the wiring, you can't take care of them yourself.
You can take care of them yourself, but trapping, it's the trapping license.
If even a habitat trap or a trap that kills them?
Yeah, because we have rules surrounding what types of traps can be used and so technically it's a technicality, but again, if you call your district game warden or regional wildlife office and work with them, you can get permission to set it
and ask them what they can do. Okay, so I want to ask you all, Josh, I'll start with you. What are you usually doing, and what's sort of a great story? What's something that you saw that you never expected?
There's not much that surprises me anymore. We were talking before the show. I do see a few times a year skunks getting into people's houses, and I actually had somebody call me recently. A skunk had gotten into their basement somehow, and it was a Friday evening. I couldn't get down there until the next day, so I called in the morning on my way, and the guy said, well, don't worry about it. We're all set. And I was kind of curious. Usually skunks are not something. A raccoon will get out on its own if you leave the door open, but skunks don't climb very well. Turns out he went down out of curiosity, and it sprayed him in the basement. And so he figured what was two if he'd already been sprayed once. So he went and got a trash can and a broom, and he went down and got it in the trash can when it sprayed him a second time, and then he put it out in his yard and let it go.
And what would your advice be for somebody's home after a skunk sprays inside of a basement?
That's not an easy one. I think that would be more like a ServPro. There are a few commercial places,
right,
I think, that can come in. It's tough this time of year because it's cold outside, so you need to neutralize that. It's a sort of an oily substance. You need to neutralize that downstairs, but you also need to air the house out, which can be tough when it's teens at night and 30 degrees during the day.
And I've heard, I had a friend who had a skunk in her house, and the expert who came and helped her with it said, you're lucky you didn't have a dog.
Yes, yeah, right, because if the dog starts barking, that can get the skunk to go off as well.
Oh, my gosh. Maynard, you got a good story? Or two or three?
Yeah. I've been doing this for over 38 years. Yes, I do. But skunks have got to be right up on the top of the list. They'll come through cat doors, and I've had little dogs chase them, and they've run into the other rooms. It's always exciting. Oh, I got a good one.
Okay.
I got a call from a funeral parlor, and they told me that the men were there at the gravesite setting the vault, and the funeral procession was going to be arriving in about 15 minutes, and there was a skunk in the hole.
Oh my gosh! So, in the hole where the vault was going to go.
Yes, and they couldn't set the vault because they would have killed the skunk, and it would have sprayed, and it would have been awful.
Were you less than 15 minutes away? Did you get there in time?
I was close. I generally have the stuff. I had a enclosed trap for use for skunks,
right,
and I very carefully lowered it down in the hole, small piece of board for guide, kind of like a funnel, and then I have a spray bottle with water. And with skunks, they don't like getting wet, and they don't feel that water is a threat to them. They just don't like it. So you could spray the butt with that, and you can guide them and steer them. I just ran him right into the trap with the spray bottle.
Took You're brave.
Him with me. I passed the funeral procession coming in as I was leaving. It was that close.
Oh, my gosh.
No, that was a close, touchy one.
The unsung hero of the day. What about you, Bob? I know you encounter wildlife in a sort of a different kind of, from a different perspective.
Yep, this didn't actually happen to me, but I did hear a story of somebody that got a skunk in their house, and then when a local police department came, they got the idea to tase it inside. And,
oh,
and on a humid day, that landowner can still smell the remnants of skunk in the house.
So your advice is do not tase the skunk
if it's in your house, for sure.
Oh, my gosh. Well, on a related note, I mean, there are folks who would just like to shoot the darn critter, the woodchuck that's destroying their garden or the fox that's in the hen house. What are the rules about shooting?
So that's where the homeowner does have the right to kill or cause to be killed any animal that's in the act of destroying property or hurting their domestic animals.
Okay.
With a few exceptions.
So I wake up in the morning, my garden's been decimated, I see a woodchuck. I can shoot it?
If it's in the act of destroying your property.
If it's done, it's too late?
Yeah, I think that's again where you would call your district game warden, regional biologist, or one of these folks to come and try to address that issue.
And do you have to have a hunting license to be able to shoot an animal that's on your property?
Not if it's in the act of destroying your property.
Okay. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send us an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. Bob, Why don't you explain to us how the system works? Because I think it's different from state to state, right? The whole animal control. Both Josh and Maynard here are private companies, but that you have a state license to do the work that you do. So if you want to just sort of let us know how it all works for somebody who luckily hasn't had to interact with it
sure.
yet.
So, you know, it's a multi-prong approach here in Maine. So we do have district game wardens, we have regional biologists, and a lot of the problems are just public awareness, taking that the attraction from the animal away from their property. But then, you know, and these guys can attest to the volume of calls that come in for animal, wildlife, human conflicts. And if we dealt with those as a district game warden or regional biologist, that would be the only job we did, and we wouldn't take care of the rest of our mission. And so we permit animal damage control agents who are private agents, and they are available at fee to take care of that.
All right. So someone will call the office, and you'll have a list.
Yep.
And you'll have a list. And often you, I'm guessing, because both of you are well-known in your areas, that people just call you. They don't go through the warden's office first.
Right. Or if they call, you know, local police departments, or they've heard from their friends, or they can call. You can also get on Maine.gov, and they have a listing of us throughout the state by county. So you can look up if you're looking for someone in your area as well.
Okay.
Yep. MaineFishandWildlife.com.
Oh, all right.
Yep.
Yeah. So, Maynard, what is your one bit of advice for a homeowner? Not have a cat door?
Cat doors are all right, but I don't like, cats shouldn't be outdoors, in my opinion. They decimate the wildlife and the birds. I don't like that. But the main thing is if your cat or your pets are outside, they are part of the food chain. So if you love your pets, keep them inside where they'll be safe. And if you've got bird feeders, you're going to have squirrels or you're going to have rats and you'll have mice. And eventually, they're going to decide to come into your house. So just know
just
that.
Something to think about.
Yeah.
Because people love bird feeders.
Yes.
They love.
I feed the birds, but I make sure I have a handful of red squirrels around to clean up the ground. And if you got red squirrels cleaning up the ground, you won't get rats. So,
okay, we're going to start with the calls and go to Melanie, who's calling from Hamden. Hi, Melanie, go ahead.
Hi, thanks so much. Thanks for the topic today. We seem to have a squirrel problem. After the conversation so far, I'm really glad it's not a skunk problem. But and the squirrel problem is not really isolated to the spring. We do have them kind of year-round. The problem is that some of them have found a way in between the first floor ceiling and the second floor. Part of our house is submerged below ground, but we've looked everywhere, high and low, to figure out how they're getting in. I have a home office on the first floor, and I hear them pitter-pattering above my head on a regular basis, and just like some suggestions on how we can figure out how to get them out of that area of the house.
And Melanie, as you were talking, both Josh and Maynard were nodding. They've seen this before, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
How do you figure out how they're getting in? Yeah.
Well, first of all, when you're hearing them running around up there, is it mainly during daylight hours or when it's dark out?
I haven't taken notes, but I would say it's probably during the day more often, during the day.
All right, because if it's during the day, then it could be gray or red squirrels. If it's at night, it more likely is mice or possibly flying squirrels. So you know, gray and red squirrels, they don't need a huge place to get into, but it's usually fairly obvious. If you have gutters, looking behind gutters is a place to look. But if they're in between the floors, usually squirrels can't manage to get down through walls. The way walls are framed, mice can fit through there, but oftentimes squirrels cannot. So you would be looking around the perimeter, a vent from a dryer sometimes. If that doesn't have a flapper on the outside, they can get in there and chew. But if you are hearing that day and night, if you're hearing that at night as well, you're more likely looking at mice, which is mostly, even though they sound loud, that's what people are hearing most often are mice.
Yeah, and it's almost impossible to seal your house to mice. Right?
I don't think you can seal your house to mice, no.
I do it.
How do you do it, Maynard?
I do. We do it all the time. It's just, it's very detailed, and you got to kind of think like the mouse. But the she mentioned that they are hearing in between the floors. If her house is made before 1840, they used a method of building called balloon framing. And balloon framing leaves the wall studs open into the basement and all the way up to the attic. So anything that gets in up above or down below can come down the walls and get off at any floor. So, yeah, so that that makes that a little more accessible. And when we people call and they say they think they have a bear in their attic, it's probably a raccoon. And if they think they have a raccoon, it's probably a squirrel. If they think they have a squirrel, it's probably a mouse.
Because the sound is so amplified, and if it's in your home, it sounds
so on a sheetrock ceiling, you're getting ready for bed, you're laying there, everything's quiet, and then a mouse starts scratching a flea, and it thump, 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 thump on your sheetrock ceiling, very loud.
The reason I said to you all that it's almost impossible to house-proof, mouse-proof your house is because they can get tiny, right? They can really get so much smaller and flatter than they are to get into a space, can't
they? Chew.
Right. Oh. Yeah, they'll chew the holes larger as well. But, yeah, the size of their head is what restricts them, and that's not much bigger around than a pencil.
Yeah. Mm.
Melanie, thanks for your call, and good luck to you. An email from Pam. Just yesterday, I looked out my window, and across the main road, lumbering slowly, I am sure I saw a bear. I have not seen one in North Yarmouth before. Is it possible they're out of hibernation? Do I have to remove bird feeders? With all the snow, I'm hesitant to do so, as we get tons of birds. So, Bob, you're the biologist. Is a bear in North Yarmouth possible?
Definitely possible. And kind of a rule of thumb we use is, you know, and I'll steal this from one of our biologists, Chuck Halsey, who works out of our strong office, is there's two things to do on April 15th, and that's file your taxes and clean up your bird feeders. And that will resolve the majority of your bear issues.
And when you say clean up your bird feeders, is that what's fallen below the feeders? Is it?
So they can be attracted, you know, this time of year they're coming out of their dens and they're pretty hungry. And so they're just looking for calories. And that can include all the waste that's on the ground the birds knock out of the bird feeder. And it's a great time of year to bring them in for a few weeks and clean them up. Use Clorox and clean up your bird feeders. And got to clean up the site around it. Or you can pour bleach or ammonia on that access screen to keep that smell and attraction away.
Okay, good advice, and thank you, Pam. We do have to go to a break already. When we come back, more of your comments and questions about critters. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Probably was under the sea ice the whole time we were walking along the edge. And when the penguin goes in the water, the leopard seal attacks. We don't think the leopard seal would have attacked Ron, but being scientists, we did not test that hypothesis.
Join us for true stories of science and the people behind it. That's on the Moth Radio Hour from PRX.
Join us for the Moth Radio Hour later this evening at 11 o'clock and again Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public Television's second statewide Create It Maine Recipe Contest is now underway for amateur chefs and cooks. The contest is for original dessert recipes with as many Maine-grown ingredients as possible. Five finalists will participate in a live bake-off at Southern Maine Community College in late April. If you're ready to step up to the plate for this sweet contest, you can visit mainepublic.org, click on Events, and then Create It.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, what to do if a raccoon, a bat, or any other of Maine's abundant wildlife takes up residency in your home. In the studio with me, Bob Cordes. He is Wildlife Special Projects Coordinator for the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. Maynard Stanley Jr. owns and operates Critter Catcher Wildlife Control, and Josh Sparks runs Sparks Ark Animal Services. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to Dan, who is calling from Brunswick. Hi, Dan. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for your program. I was calling to see if your guests could help me identify an animal that came by my place a while ago. I have an office that looks out on a large forested area, and this animal came out in the middle of the day about lunchtime. It looked sort of like a weasel. It had the same sort of snout, ears, and a muscular tail. Its body was probably about 14 inches long. And while an otter, and it had longer legs than anything like an otter, it looked absolutely ferocious. It looked mean, entitled, and hungry.
Probably that's a mink or a fisher.
Yeah. It's kind of 14 inches.
Probably more like a mink. Yeah. Mink.
You think about 14 inches, Dan?
Okay. Yeah, about...
Look it up. Yeah, that's probably what you'll find it is. They're about the size of a ferret.
Yeah, we had had a groundhog problem where groundhogs had taken over a fox den that was under our front porch. And it stayed around for about a week, and then we didn't have a groundhog problem anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe the fox came back.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
Dan, thank you. Thanks for your call. We have an email from Lisa. Speaking of foxes, for the past 3 years, a fox family has raised their young on our property. While we are enamored with watching the kits frolic behind the veggie garden, we are not keen on losing our chickens, which has happened. We used to be able to free range them, but they've been cooped up for the past 3 spring summer seasons. We have an 85-pound dog who has the run of the property, and we've used wolf urine to mark around where we've seen the clay. Last weekend, we started cutting back the brambles on the berm we think they are living in. Any other ideas?
Yeah. I get this. In my area, we have a lot of on-estate gentlemen farmers that move in. They buy an old farmhouse, and they fix it all up. And they want free-range chickens and ducks and they call me because something's killing them. And I guess whether it's a pet or if it's a farm animal, when your animals are outside of the pen, they're part of the food chain. And I won't, for one, I won't try to trap these animals and get rid of them, and I won't shoot them. Unless if the homeowner is taking good care of the animals, they got them inside, then I can work with them. But they have what's called carrying capacity. So every square acre, every mile of land, a square mile of land has a capacity to control, house a certain number of deer, fox, mink, all these different animals. And if you take any of those away, it's just a matter of time before that vacated spot is filled. So it's a never-ending process. So I educate the new owners of these farms to come up with, I like a 2-foot stick that you can throw that will bounce and jump. I like cans. I put like a soup can. You put washers in it so it rattles. Air horns. Anything that makes noise. You've got to make that animal fear for its life. And if you can make him fear for his life, he won't come back. So it's an education for the people and to educate the animals. So that's what we do.
And I would just add to what Maynard said that, you know, foxes aren't the only animals that will eat chickens.
No.
So it's really important to coop them up. And they can be free range inside a fenced structure and that has overhead netting, too, because we have a lot of avian predators that come in. And and then when it's specifically to red fox with families, oftentimes have alternative den sites. And so if you can find where they're denning, if it's too close to your house with young, you can put ammonia or bleach soaked rags. Stick it near that den, and they won't tolerate that and go to their alternate den site, which may be a little better for your family.
Yeah, battery-powered radio right outside the den does a good job of that as well.
Oh, really? They don't like radio?
No, when you disturb a fox den, they'll still be in the general neighborhood, but like you say, they have a couple of alternate sites. So usually if they're too close to the house, if you can set up a light and a radio by the den, it will do the same thing. Usually 24 to 48 hours, she'll pull the pups and go somewhere else. That might not stop her from coming to eat your chickens, but she won't be right in your yard. And, you know, I catch wildlife and move it for a living, and if you come to my house, nothing can get in my chicken pen because, like Maynard says, you're not going to trap everything away. They're gonna come back. So it really is a matter of making it so those animals can't get to the chickens.
Josh, you don't have free-range chickens at your house.
Not anymore. We tried it.
You tried it.
Yeah, another thing that works well is just human urine. on all around the den area, which also works like with the raccoon mom. If you want to get her out of your house, if you've got some male raccoon urine, the males will kill the young, so the mother will move them. They can't tolerate if that area is contaminated with a predator or something they fear. They can't tell if it's real or if it's what's been put around the house. So
if you have raccoons, say, in a crawl space, can you get the male raccoon urine at a farm store or something like that?
You can order it online.
And then you just put it in a dish and put it in your crawl space and they may leave on their own?
Usually you only use some like a tennis ball and put some on it with gloves and you put a string on it and you throw it so it will bounce around in there and then you pull it back and just throw it all in different directions.
That's ingenuity.
You don't want to leave it up there because the smell will go away, but the raccoon will be gone before that.
We'll go to Cameron, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, Cameron. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a
go
question
ahead.
About bats. I have a family property on the Sebec River that's over 250 years old, and the house is unfinished, and it doesn't have electricity or plumbing. But we're thinking about starting to renovate it, and there is a very sizable bat population upstairs that is spreading guano everywhere. And we don't want to kill the bats because we have lots of mosquitoes on that property, but we're wondering what our options are for humanely evicting them.
And this is an important question, isn't it, Bob? Because bats are in trouble.
Yeah. So we have 8 species of bats in Maine, and 3 of those are on the either federally or state threatened and endangered. And so there definitely are some methods you can employ. And, you know, and if you want to keep them on your property, bat boxes are a way to go. And there's some design plans on our website, but you do a quick Google search, you can find good design plans for bat houses. And that would be my first step. And then these guys can jump into we do have some exclusion techniques where the bats can escape from the attic and then not allow them to get back in. So yep. We're not killing them, but they can escape.
Now, Bob, would your biologist want to know if there is a place where there's a significant number of bats? I know you're trying to track the population.
Yeah, definitely. With that significant amount of bats in a colony, it would definitely be worth calling in or sending a quick email to the department.
Yeah, and so what do you guys want to add to how to exclude bats without hurting them?
Well, I was going to ask, too, are they in there during the winter? Do you know? Do you go there in the winter at all?
If I had to guess, I would assume yes, although the property isn't really accessible outside of the summertime. So there's no way to know for sure.
Is it heated in the wintertime?
No, it is not heated. It's completely unwired.
Okay. They're not hibernating in there. They're coming there in the summer.
Yeah, they're probably gone. So you could probably, if you could get in there in the winter when they're gone, you could close up all access points, block those off. Once they're gone in the fall, you know, if it's hard to get in there when it's snowy, usually October, they'll be gone. Once you can see they're gone, block the access points, put up your bat boxes so that when they do come back in the spring, they have a place on your property where they can stay. But that's the easiest way if they're leaving in the wintertime.
Yeah, if you have, if you got some of that guano, if you put up bat boxes, if you want to take some of that guano and mix it with glycerin, and you want to spread it like a paste over the bottom entrance of the bat houses. Because the bats, they really don't want to leave where they're living already. So if you want them to go in the bat houses, you've got to make it look like and smell like to them that is a place for the bats.
Emily on Facebook also has a similar question. She says, bats who have made their home in the roof of the chicken coop. So she also wants to have them find another home, but keep them around. Bob, Josh had mentioned that if you can get to that place before they're done hibernating, you can close it off. When are they moving back from their winter hibernation grounds back into people's chicken coops and attics?
Well, some of our bats are year-round residents, and so they'll overwinter here in Maine. When it starts warming up, so I think any time, just like our other critters that are coming out now, and any time in the next few weeks, they'll be more active when that daytime temperature allows them to do that.
So, David, you'd recommend Cameron act fast.
Yes.
Yeah. Cameron, thanks for your call and good luck. Go ahead.
I'll just say, and similar to mice, bats can get in a very small space, a very small hole.
We'll go to Joanne, who's calling from Surrey. Hi, Joanne. Go ahead.
Hi. We had just two incidences of this, but it was very disturbing to me. We had a snake come into our basement, and then we had one in our kitchen a couple of times. And this was both times it was in the spring, and the ground was very wet. So I think it was something to do with that that drove them inside, and there must be some kind of crack in the foundation that enabled them to come in. I don't suppose there's anything I can do to keep this from happening again.
Well, the good news, Joanne, is in Surrey there are no poisonous snakes, right, Bob?
Yep, no venomous snakes.
No venomous snakes. What's the difference?
The difference is you ingest poison, you get injected with venom.
Okay.
And so no, there's no venomous snakes in Maine, no native venomous snakes in Maine.
Right,
so.
Unless something's been brought in illegally. And it's possible, right, that some in southern Maine near the New Hampshire border?
Maybe.
Maybe. But in Surrey, she doesn't have a venomous snake.
No. But they will bite and they will hurt, so handle with caution.
You guys have some advice?
Garter snakes do have a little bit of toxin in there, a bite, but not enough to hurt a person. It'll neutralize a frog or the small creatures that they might be eating. But.
And is that a dirt and fieldstone foundation or a newer? Sounds like if you're thinking there's a crack.
Oh, she hung gone? Up, all yeah. Right.
So, you know, if it's a dirt foundation, I actually have a next-door neighbor that milk snakes hibernate in their basement, and you can usually go down there in the winter and time. And find 30 or 40 of them if you really look around. So they do get some in the spring sometimes. It's usually an accident or your house is warmer, and especially on a cool evening. If they're going towards that warmth, they can come in. But it's a matter, again, of making sure things are tight around the foundation. Again, the same thing, depending on the size of a snake, you know, the gap the size of a pencil they can fit through.
Josh, what do you do with 30 or 40 hibernating snakes?
Leave them until spring.
Yeah.
They don't bother. Well, his wife's not that impressed, but she doesn't go down there.
So, and do you come back in the spring and
no,
get
no,
rid of
no,
them for
him? No, he leaves them. They're there every winter.
They're great for eating bugs.
Neighbor. Yeah, they keep
bugs
the insects
around
down,
and
the
mice around the house.
Yeah.
Oh my.
Unless
okay.
you have an actual phobia of them, they don't really cause many problems.
Okay. Yeah. So Robin in South Portland has a woodchuck under her shed. She likes the woodchuck. She just doesn't want it living under her shed because it chews on the wood. She's wondering if there's something she could do around the bottom of the shed, maybe some sort of metal flashing or something to have it not go there and live there. Any ideas?
Yeah. Well, the way we do is we dig a trench all around the building down 6 to 8 inches. We attach a poly-coated hardware cloth, and we attach it up underneath the sill. Goes down in this trench, and then it comes out, and then we backfill it.
Mm.
That will keep anything from living underneath there, right?
Yeah.
They won't usually chew enough to do any structural damage. You know, they might be chewing a little bit to make that entrance underneath the shed a little bit bigger. You know, if you're worried about the looks of it, you could put a little flashing on there. But if you don't have a garden, usually the only problems they will cause is if they tunnel underneath a walkway or something like that. But they're not going to usually chew a building enough to cause any real structural damage.
No.
Maybe just a little bit of how it looks on the outside. But
you know, with woodchucks, we find they've got three types of entrances. They have a high hole and a low hole, which a high one would be up on the bank. A low hole would be down lower on the bank. And then they have a hidey hole. And this little hidey hole is a place where they can escape. Usually it's under, like you see a woodchuck go under a building. If he's under there, he's not living under the building. He's dug a tunnel under there. And that's just the building is hiding that hole. And they'll be sometimes in thorn bushes or under a wood pile. And it's just an escape place.
So they're not just cute. They're smart, too.
No, God made them that way. I don't think they got a clue.
We'll go to Jean calling from Howland. Hi, Jean. Go ahead.
I have a story to tell about skunks, getting rid of skunks, how we did it. We've had them twice, and we use hot dogs. And we have a back door that if you don't shut it, the wind blows it open. And when we went out to the old room, we knew something was there, and there was a skunk sleeping, I guess. He's curled up. And then we just got hot dogs, let him so far away from him, right to the door, leaving it open, and watched. And he came out. He got up, went out to get the hot dogs. So we put him right out through the door, out on the ground. The minute you see him go out the door, you go run and slam the door. And
best way to do it.
Well, we did. And he went through that. Yep. He went through our fence so fast. We have a wire fence, and he or she went through that fence so fast. Haven't seen any since.
It's the same with your garage. You leave the garage door open, you get up in the morning, and there's a skunk curled up in the back corner. You can trail a little food out, but even if you don't do that, if you leave the garage door open the next night, it will usually leave once it's dark, as long as there's not something wrong with it, and then you can just shut your door.
All right, Gene, thanks for your tip. And we do have to take another break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Faderly Law, dedicated to providing effective counsel on all matters of land use and real estate in Maine. Learn more at FaderlyLawMaine.com.
Sacramento is in turmoil over the police killing of Stephon Clark, a 22-year-old shot 20 times in his backyard.
Stephon Clark's name must live. Live along with Michael Brown. Live along with Trayvon Martin. Live along with Alfred Alango.
Clark's funeral is set for today. We'll bring you the latest this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can hear All Things Considered every weekday afternoon from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. Stay with us at 2 o'clock for the Commonwealth Club of California. Today, journalist Emily Chang, author of Brotopia, which is about sexism in Silicon Valley. Chang explains how hard it is for women to crack the Silicon ceiling and what companies and employees need to do to bring down the Brotopia culture once and for all. That's coming up in about 20 minutes on Commonwealth Club of California at 2 o'clock on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what to do when wildlife gets a little too close. In our Augusta studio with me, Maynard Stanley Jr. He runs the Critter Catcher Wildlife Control. Josh Sparks operates Sparks Ark Animal Services. And Bob Cordes is the Wildlife Special Projects Coordinator for the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. James writes, "This is horrible, but it's a solution. Decon for the mice and the rats and the skunks. Strategically placed. It's horrible, but it works." Maynard, you're shaking your head. Josh, you don't like poison either.
Yeah, if you use poison, the main reason don't use poison is because the poisons don't kill the rodents quickly. So they can wander around at night, staggering around, poisoned but not dead, and then they get eaten by owls, and that kills the owls. So don't use poison. Use traps, catch them, and then you can feed those dead rodents to the birds. Crows love them. So.
Yeah, you also run the risk of something dying in your wall.
Yeah.
I get a lot of calls. Something smells in their house. They threw a bunch of decon in the attic. They don't understand why it stinks.
Yeah.
And then I think they mentioned skunks. I know there's some laws around what you can place for poison, too, and I'm pretty sure that's illegal to be trying to specifically target skunks with a poison.
Yeah, and I don't know off the top of my head what's approved for what species, but I would think decon is not approved for skunks.
No.
Yeah, it just causes a lot of problems.
We'll go to Leslie calling from Ellsworth. Hi, Leslie. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for your show. You always do a great job. I just want to discuss the reality of living with rats. And this winter, I had a terrible experience. I live right in town in Ellsworth and discovered that I actually had resident rats. I have a nice home. I live on a nice street. And they ended up doing about $3,000 worth of damage. And my exterminator determined that what was happening is they're coming in through the storm drains. When you live in town, you have a little storm drain down in your basement.
Yep.
And with all the torrential rain, they need a place to go. And I just want to say it was one of the worst experiences of my life. Horrible.
Maynard is nodding and laughing.
Oh, yeah. I rats are disgusting. And the storm drains, you need to put wire in them, or you need to get a piece of expanded metal or something. Put something over them so they can't come in there. But they, all your animals go in cycles. There's years where there's not a lot of them, and then they build up, and then something either something kills them or eats them, or the disease will cut back the number. So all the animals are going in cycles, and right now we're seeing a real rise in the rats in particular. And they'll get it. If they want to come in, they'll come in. They'll chew a hole. We took over 30 on one really nice home down on the coast two summers ago. It was really bad.
and you catch critters for a living, and you say it was really bad.
Rats are unlike, they're more like a fox or a coyote. They're very cunning. They do this for a living, and they're difficult to catch.
They're really
you got
to
do everything right. That's why. And the other bad part is that homeowners will try to trap them, and they don't do it right. So they educate the rat to stay away from the traps. Because if a rat goes into the trap the wrong way, the kill bar comes up underneath them, it hurts them, throws them, and then you can't get them near those traps again.
Leslie, thank you for taking the conversation in this direction. We'll move on to Richard, who's calling from Sebago Lake. Hi, Richard. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Hey, a quick story. When my wife and I were first dating, she was living in Casco, and we were having breakfast one morning and could hear this thump, thump, thump out in the barn. And we look out there, and there's a skunk with a baby food jar in his head. His head was stuck inside the jar. And so I called the game warden, and he said, well, just try and break the jar, you know. And I tried a couple futile attempts, but didn't want to hurt this little skunk. And so trying to figure out what to do, and finally, another friend comes over, and he walks up to the skunk and pulls the jar right off of his head, and the skunk walked out the door, and he said, that was the baby skunk. He's too small to spray.
No, there's no such thing as too small to spray if they're out and walking around.
Yep.
The babies are
really
worse.
So Richard's friend just got lucky.
He just got lucky.
Yep. Yeah. There you go, Richard. Thanks for sharing your story. We'll go to Becky calling from Scarborough. Hi, Becky. Go ahead.
Hi. Becky? I have a mystery that maybe your guests can solve for me. A couple of weeks ago, I opened my garage door. I heard all kinds of commotion and then saw a raccoon under my car. Okay. I shoot him out. He waddled down the road. Didn't look hurt. I ran off to work. I got home and noticed that there was blood on my front fender, across my hood, on my windshield, but nowhere in the garage. So.
They have an upstairs in the garage?
Sorry.
Is it?
So, no, there was no blood in the garage. I don't know if the raccoon could have gotten into my car somehow. Can they get that small?
They can crawl up and around the engine compartment on most cars and trucks.
Right. They probably can't get into the actual space, you know, where we sit. But, yeah, they can get up in the engine compartment. I don't know. Possibility if it injured itself. Or maybe it's just, I don't know. That's a tough one.
Well, sometimes they can get dinged by another car. And they're hurt. Sometimes not fatally, but they're banged up in good shape. And they'll try to find a place to hide and recuperate. So maybe it just got hit out in the street and it wandered in there.
Or maybe it crawled in your car when you were at work and you got home and it rode home with you and crawled out when you got in the garage. That happens on occasion, too.
Yeah.
Becky, thanks for your call. Nason says, over two seasons, a bear has destroyed all of my 10 beehives despite a very powerful electric fence. So I stopped keeping them, invited a hunter to come in. The hunter had been baiting and videoing but hasn't bagged the bear. If I were to start keeping bees again and caught the bear in the act, would it be okay to shoot it myself?
I think technically, yes, but, you know, we would definitely encourage that electric fence. And, you know, occasionally there's bears that will go through the fence. An easy trick associated with the fence is to put a little aluminum foil and peanut butter on that. And so when they go and sniff it with their wet nose or their tongue, they get a real powerful zap and
it
helps prevent that. Because if they can go through the fence quickly, they may get a shock on their fur and not have quite the impact. And so it may, you know, it's pretty effective. Get to that wet zap and really tell them that that's not the area to be in.
Yeah, she could also call IF&W, and they can send somebody over that's licensed for trapping bear with a live trap, and they can trap it and relocate it.
All right. Well, good luck to that for you, and do start your beekeeping again. Bob, we have some more calls and more emails coming in. Most of them are about keeping animals away, but what if you want to take care of an animal? What if you find a baby fox and you've noticed that its mom isn't around, or a den of foxes? What do you do?
That's when you, before you even get to the point of trying to do anything yourself, call your district game warden or your regional biologist. Oftentimes, well-intentioned people think that these are orphaned animals, and that a lot of times that is, most of the time it's not the case. So we put out a little brochure that says, if you care, leave them there, and that's absolutely the truth. It's really the best for that animal, and you can't legally possess live animals in the state without a special permit, and we don't usually give that out to people for wildlife.
It's the same with baby birds, you know. Baby birds will fledge. They'll leave the nest before they're actually able to fly. So people see them hopping around in the yard and they can't fly away and they assume it has a broken wing. 99% of the time that is a fledgling and the parents are somewhere nearby. People are usually concerned about traffic, about cats, but those birds are at the age where they know they're a bird. They do not want to be fed by a person. So even if you bring them to a rehabilitator, it's a really tough job. You know, the best thing is to leave them alone, keep the cats in. If you do really think it has a broken wing, you know, we all have a camera in our pocket now. You can snap a picture and send it to someone. We can usually tell you pretty quickly if it really needs help or if it's a fledgling that should be left right there.
All right, we'll go to Barbara, who's calling from Greenwood. Hi, Barbara. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Two comments. First of all, we have tenacious squirrels. So tenacious that one was on our bird feeder. I went at that animal with my broom, and the squirrel took the bird, leapt, and took the bird feeder and the arm right off the deck. Okay, so we're trying to get rid of these squirrels eating everything. What do you feel, what do your experts think about sonar systems to keep squirrels away?
I haven't seen one that works yet. I've set a lot of traps in attics right next to one.
Yeah, I've never seen them work.
Oh, no.
They're good at catching people that are looking to buy them, though.
Yes. It's, you know, it's a, if you feed the birds, you don't just feed the birds. You know, I get calls, people want me to catch the squirrels because they're eating the bird feed, and I don't usually do that because, you know, you get rid of those squirrels and that food is there. And that void just gets filled up with more squirrels. You can move 20 squirrels out of a yard now, and if there's enough bird feed out there for 20, by this fall there will be 20 again. So it's a matter of living with the squirrels. There are some ways, if you get really inventive and keep them away from trees, that you can keep them from getting up to the feeders. They can still eat spilled food. Or maybe, you know, you think about a couple of feeders that are harder for the squirrels to get and one that's easier for them to get, and you put in food specifically for the squirrels and try and keep that away from what's attracting the birds.
Barbara, good luck to you. You know, I think I remember a BBC documentary from ages ago where scientists tried to figure out how to keep squirrels from a birdhouse, a bird feeder, and they were not successful. The squirrels always outsmarted them.
We have one in our yard that learned how to open the bird feeder. He hangs from the hook, and he's actually spun it so that he dumps all the bird seed on the ground so he can eat it on the ground.
Yeah. Michael on Facebook, I once saw a large cat in a field behind my house. I don't believe it was a coon cat. And after comparing it to several pictures online, it most closely resembled an adolescent cougar. How rare would it be to see a cougar in southern Maine? Bob, this is a huge debate, isn't it?
Yeah, and trapping on this question. We do not have any known breeding populations of mountain lions in the state, so To have an adolescent mountain lion would be a very rare occurrence. It's probably a case of misidentification. And you know, we have plenty of bobcats around, and they're often mistaken for.
So probably, you know, a bobcat.
Could be.
There's another option, too. There's a lot of people actually have licenses, federal licenses, where they can have cougars for pets. And I've heard that there's a fairly large population of them. So sometimes they could escape and...
Licensed and unlicensed, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So we're going to try to squeeze in one more call. Let's see. Debbie in Harpswell. Go ahead.
Hi there. I have two peach trees that are my pride and joy, but the local porcupines also love them too much.
Yeah.
And I've tried everything. I have tried noisy cans, lights, radios, getting up in the middle of the night and looking to see if I'm there. And they don't, I would share, but they take bites out of a dozen of them, and then they throw another dozen on the ground, and it's very discouraging.
Oh, that's terrible. Debbie, you know, right when you started talking, as soon as you had peach trees, both Josh and Maynard mouthed to each other porcupines. Yeah. So what do you do?
The best thing is if you can flash them. If you've got tree limbs high enough off the ground, and if you don't, you want to think about cutting those. If you can flash that tree, you probably want to get about 3 feet of flashing. And you can actually take the flashing in a ring, take a little strip of wood on the inside so you can screw into the wood rather than into the tree. And once the porcupine cannot climb that flashing, that ends the problem. They're not easy to catch. They're not easy to just discourage. That's the best way to do it if you can flash them.
And if you don't like the aesthetics of that flashing, you can just spray paint it the color of the tree. And
yeah,
pretty effective.
I trap them, and then I put the flashing on. I use a stovepipe.
That's an idea, yeah.
The one I did last summer, she had peach trees, and the porcupines were going out on the limbs, and the weight was breaking the limbs off from the tree. Yeah. They were eating the leaves before the fruit came.
Oh, my goodness. Good luck to you, Debbie, and thank you to everybody who called. I apologize to those of you we couldn't get to, but an hour is an hour, and we're out of time. Our guest today, Josh Sparks, the owner of Sparks Ark Animal Services. Maynard Stanley Jr. runs Critter Catcher Wildlife Control, and Bob Cordes is Wildlife Special Projects Coordinator for the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today. We had additional help from Steve Jeruzic and our Augusta Studio. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. This show will be broadcast again at 8. Tomorrow on the program, The Month in Review. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.